You're listening to Around Comics, episode 231, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by, like all these crazy folks. Hello there, everybody. That was weak. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. Let me get you introduced to this week's
What's
panel.
What's up, dudes?
That's a tiny type. How do you read that?
It's like an insane clown posse show up.
I got to get my bifocals out.
We got drunk Hillary Barty here, but he's not on the panel. He's just in the peanut gallery.
He's going to get aggressive, though.
He is. It's like Hillary's angry tonight.
He was happy.
Shut up. I'm not angry.
He's a little handsy, too.
Yeah. Mr. Tom Caters. Mr. Tom Caters, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little on edge.
It's freaking you out a little bit.
And that's in his personal space.
Returning guest and one of our favorite comic book creators and just people in general, Mr. Steve Bryant.
Woo-hoo!
Hey, hi, Mom.
How you doing, Mr. Creator of Athena Voltaire and you're working on the Ursula Wild and Canterbury Ghost and you're everywhere.
Canterville. It kind of gives you a clue.
Oh, did I say Canterbury? Canterville Ghost.
You're working on the Cadbury Ghost.
It's the Canterbury Tales, the Cannibal Ghost.
Chris kind of knows about literature.
Yeah. Tonight's episode brought to you by beer.
Yeah.
So is this the same story that the movie was based on?
The Oscar Wilde novella?
The movie.
I never saw the movie. I'm asking.
This show's already.
I didn't read the novella.
Let's just start over.
We will get to that in a little while.
What's a movie called The Canterville Ghost?
You just need to talk slower because then I'll understand.
Steve Bryant, ladies and gentlemen.
Our other guest, Mr. Jim Heffern. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Okay.
Better as the night goes.
Oh yeah, it's it got a little crazy here a little bit later in the evening. So yeah, Dark Tower's turned into the place to be on a Friday night, which we always like to see. So
all the women left, so now we can just really be ourselves.
I want Hillary to put his pants on, please, for the love of God.
Somebody's getting naked tonight, and this scares me. Let me remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives.
Like me to read some
absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. And love the InStockTrades.com. And right now you can it's your last call to get the Adventures of Luther Arkwright. We're going to be recording our book club selection episode next week, I believe.
Okay.
So The Adventures of Luther Arkwright is available at InStockTrades.com for 45% off the cover price. It can be yours for the low price of $10.42. And next week, whenever we do that episode, we will announce our next book club. And I was talking to Sal. And he's got about three or four things that he's considering. He's just paring them down. He's wanting something fun. So we're gonna
something
have a new
fun.
Yeah.
I thought the Book of the Month Club was supposed to be like a test of patience. That's how we've approached.
That's
it so
how we
far.
Have approached 600 page archives. Yeah. You know, ultra dense Brian Talbot
Essential,
books.
Essential Thor Volume 1. I'd read it.
Yeah. Well, actually, you had talked about it before we started recording tonight. Maybe that's a good place to start. You had, and I know that Steve is a connoisseur of fine comic books, and we'll find out Jim's taste as
we'll
go here.
We'll test Jim.
We will test Jim. But you said that you had just picked up and reading for the first time the Walter Simonson Thor from the
I never the liked Thor, Vision, Thor right? when I was a kid. But I was more of a DC kid anyway, and Thor was just, I was just like, Thor doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So like, I just never picked up Thor. I never read it when I was a kid. And I was in Pittsburgh, and I was bored, which happens when you're in Pittsburgh sometimes. And I was at a comic book store, and I picked up the Thor Visionaries Volume 1, Walt Simonson. And it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
In like a lot of ways. Like
amazing.
Yeah, it blew my mind. I've been tearing through that book, and I was like, oh. I just keep thinking about, if I could go back in time, I'd talk to my 10-year-old self and just say,
You should read this.
You're so stupid with your 10-year-old tastes.
But now, as a 10-year-old, were you kind of scarred by Adventures in Babysitting's references to Thor?
You know what? It was
God, Steve.
It might have been roughly around the same time. I don't think it influenced it, but it only helped to reinforce my ideas.
Because, yeah, Thor. You know, you had Brad in that movie, you know, Thor's a homo.
and then every time I went to the saw comic books, I was like, oh, Thor. I'm just like, nah, I don't. Gods.
I need to qualify that. That's a quote from the movie.
That's not Steve's.
Whatever the Norse gods do in their own time is their own personal business.
I started reading it on the plane, actually, when I was stuck on the runway for an hour. So I was lucky I brought something. And I was struck by the. It's kind of cool to read a book that, for a lot of it, the writer and the was the same as the artist. And I was just looking at the art, and I was like, you know, nowadays, I was like, I don't think you could kind of get away with that art in like a Thor book, because it's really cool art, but it's also very like strange and
stylized.
Yeah, extremely stylized, and obviously that's the only way that he could get everything done on time was to use that very stylized method. And it looks really cool, and it looks really different. If you saw a book like that today, you'd be like, "Oh, what, whoa, the house? That's not the house style for how it was going." But no, it's all right. You can cut it. What were you going to say, Steve?
Well, you were talking about having the writer artist at that period. Yeah. That was just such a cool time at Marvel because you had, Byrne doing the Fantastic Four, you had Miller doing Daredevil, and you had Simonson on Thor, and it was kind of a whole era of cartoonists, essentially.
Yeah, and it was the art is just, I was just like, whoa, this is, you look at like the actual composition of like the panels, and it's like, this is, sometimes it's so ridiculously simple, like, but
does the job, but does the job better
effective
than
in telling what the story is.
Well, my favorite part about the way that those books look is the way that Simonson, Jim knows where I'm going. Simonson's work goes in with Workman Jr.'s lettering.
Oh yeah,
you know, you'll have the word balloon that'll open at the top of the panel, and there's just so much room to breathe on those. I thought,
and the building of the sword with the. With the sound effects.
Was oh, yeah. Just like, and it was funny because the stuff that when I was a kid that led me away from not reading Marvel stuff is that when I was a kid, I always liked the DC stuff because I had like a very fanciful imagination. I was always more drawn towards like outlandish than like Daredevil. That stuff didn't really interest me when I was a kid. Thor would have completely interested me because it was exactly all that stuff that I really love because it is... just outlandish and like just crazy in parts.
Only superhero that's actually been turned into a frog,
I mean that stuff's insane. Or like the fact that Beta Ray Bill is introduced like immediately into it. I'm like, I'm like, why didn't I read this when I was a kid? I would have loved this. Is exactly the sort of stuff that I love. But at the time, I always thought of Marvel as being like Daredevil and Spider-Man and like being very street level. I just didn't have much interest in that. And I was like,
talking about Beta Ray Bill. That's a character that worked so well in the Simonson Thor that they've just never been able to get that character to work.
I totally agree. I think part of it was when he came in and he bested Thor.
He beat
so
Thor.
It was somebody that was tougher than Thor. And
I think part of it though too is I think I don't know if it's readers or writers today. I don't think they feel as comfortable with the Asgardian type, like honor duel. Like you could get away with that sort of like half like samurai code of honor, half comic booky type stuff that I think nowadays, for whatever reason, like tastes have changed a little bit, where it has to be a little bit more winking and a little bit more like gallows humor, or, and it doesn't quite translate the same.
Sure.
Like, for better or worse, whatever, like, tastes just don't flow in that direction anymore with how those books go.
You know, I think when he came in, too, and, you know, kind of turned things on its ear to start with, I think of the, you know, the fact that Donald Blake was now gone. Now he was, you know, the buff guy in the T-shirt when he wasn't Thor.
Yeah.
And Beta Ray Bill and all these sort of elements where you're thinking, that's great, because there are a lot of great creators have come to books and sort of turned things around and left, but he actually brought everything to sort of a, you know, a neat, especially with the building of the sword, this fight against Surtur. I don't know how far you are on the whole sort of story.
I'm almost finished.
But it just, everything, there was a point to all of it, and it just was amazing. And I was never, I saw it the same way you did. I was never a Thor fan, and once I was in, I was hooked. I couldn't wait every month.
I was like, whoa, except there is one reprint error. And what I got were these two pages reversed. Oh. And at first I was like, that's strange storytelling. When they said that, I flipped the page and I was like, oh, they have the pages flipped. That's right.
Ooh, how progressive of Walt Simonson to do
this. This is like Grant Morrison. And then I was like, oh, okay. They just flipped two pages around because this makes more sense. In the other direction.
No, that is Simonson's Thor will always be my Thor. I mean, there are folks out there that, you know, Kirby is the defining Thor artist, and he established everything, and it's Kirby or nothing. And then I think there's a whole other generation that's like, no, it's Walt Simonson defined for an entire generation what Asgard should be.
Why isn't there a podcast called Kirby or Nothing?
Kirby or Nothing.
just talking about Kirby.
Well, there was the Kirby cast back in the day. But I'll tell you,
I'm going to start actually Kirby Your Enthusiasm.
That's good. There you go. That might be an episode title. The new Thor, which you are reading, Tom, correct?
I am not.
You're not reading?
I started, and then when I found out it was going to $3.99,
I was like,
I'm not going to bother.
It's good, but I'm going to start trade waiting. But no, I love, it's kind of the first time since Simonson has done Thor that I feel like it's been reinvented and re-energized, and it's like, this is a new version of this character that I can really grasp a hold of and enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, just an interesting, you know, the reinventing him visually, too, and when we first saw that, we're thinking, oh, you know, come on, stick with what we know, and we'll accept it.
Where's the classic costume?
But the armor and the things that he has now, I bought into it. I think it looks great.
That's awesome.
But he is a brilliant, brilliant artist, fantastic storyteller. I think he is. I mean, he's sort of he's old school in the way he can tell a story. But you know, with these sort of, I think when he came in with, was it Legion? Is when he more of his mainstream stuff, and it was just had this sort of cool European vibe to it, but just an amazing, amazing artist.
If it would be still $2.99, I would have kept it. I was like,
just get it in trade. I enjoy it.
But the topic of other old stuff, because I spend a lot of time reading old stuff. It was funny. I was reading a bunch of old Flash comics, and I read a letter in a Flash comic book from 1968, written by, who was it?
Was it a current writer or somebody that
was somebody,
was
a writer from like the like, I want to say like Stephen Grant, or that writing in to complain about Ross Andrew drawing the Flash because it wasn't it wasn't Carmine Infantino, and they just printed all these letters of people bitching about Ross Andrew drawing the Flash because they were used to Carmine Infantino, and I was like, it's funny to think like in
more hindsight, changes the more it's
like how you know the Andrew stuff, you know, looks great because Ross Andrew was a great artist, and then to see all just angry you know, if it was it's exactly the proof about the thing about the internet where people are like, oh, the internet's just made people more bitchy. I'm like, no, people have always bitched. You just couldn't read about it all the time.
Yeah,
I'm like,
that is 100%.
That is 100% proof. Is that letter column of just two line letters like, I'm going to stop reading because Infantino isn't drawing the Flash anymore. And I like the Infantino stuff, and I'm like, man, this really inexplicably pissed off 10-year-olds. You know? And it makes a little more sense because it's like 10-year-olds writing it than it is like, yeah.
I just love that 10-year-olds were writing letters.
Yeah, like, oh, all these angry kids just, like, and then I was, well, the only difference is now it's, like, angry 35-year-olds, right? Yeah. Like, listen, people always bitched about everything. We just couldn't read it.
They're still 10-year-olds in a lot of ways,
yeah,
Tom,
just so. Still, like, oh, Ross Andrew does not know how to write. He makes the Flash's head too big. Yeah, but it was more like stuff like that. It was,
excuse me, it looks too bulbous.
Yeah, his head... The Flash is supposed to be sleek. I'll bring this letter in like in 2 weeks, and like, it's funny. It's funny to read like angry kids' letters.
But didn't the same thing just happen recently with Flash, with the guy that does the Eternals, when he did the Mark Waid?
Oh,
relatively recent issues, and it was the same sort of crying out for. Yeah,
no matter who draws, whatever. Nowadays you don't have the letter column. I do find it funny that they printed like just an entire page of letters of people like. Bitching about
Acuna.
Yeah.
People were complaining about that, but it's funny.
My favorite, like, non-bitching issue that if it happened today, I wonder what would happen. In the first Agents of Atlas trade, you've got the reprint of the issue of What If, and you have the letter column from that issue. And Roy Thomas is, like, referring to the fact that originally scheduled in that issue was supposed to be What If Conan were in the modern day. And he says, Big John Buscema couldn't make his deadline because he had to go off to the Angoulême Festival in France. And I'm like, oh, shit, man, if that were today.
Yeah. Everyone would lose their mind.
He's a hack. He's going to conventions instead of working. He's probably fucking playing video games.
First of all, everyone would have known that it was a fill-in issue 4 months ahead of time. You know, like it would have been in lying in the gutters or whatever the equivalent was. Like 1970, then everyone would have been worked up for like four months about the fact that it's a Buscema was at a European festival and could not draw his issue.
Plus, he was probably already drawing 4 other books that month. Chain smoking the whole time. And
What If was probably on the bottom of the list of things to get done.
I was going
to
say that What If. What if the Avengers formed in the 50s?
That's the one that's in the Agents of Atlas.
Yeah, that was a former guest of Around Comics, Don Glut.
Yes.
Wrote that.
And I imagine nowadays if like everyone went to pick up an issue and my favorite thing is old comics where the company would print a letter explaining why the book went to 12 cents from 10 cents. Right. Like an apologetic letter about like, hey, this is why we're doing it. And nowadays
they hide it.
They slowly sneak it up on you.
Nowadays they say it's because not enough of you are buying. And then I think it's followed with an unspoken suck it, bitches.
No, actually this last week I got home, read Thor, and I was like, man, that was really good. Turned it over. Motherfuckers! Oh, damn, they got me!
Did you not know it was $3.99?
No, I did not know it was $3.99. I was like, where are you, my friend? Bastards!
Yeah, you got tricked.
I did, I get.
I got
Thored.
It's Chicago. It's not Chicago. It's Chicago. It's not Chicago.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day.
Free shipping? Gee, Chris, that's just great.
Now you can watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today.
Woohoo! Do it now!
Okay, you were saying that before. Is that a breaking point for you for some of your titles then? Or when you were saying that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I did enjoy the new Thor stuff, but I was like, man, I'm not gonna pay
$4.
Yeah, $4 for it.
Oh, no, wait, are you on board for Wednesday Comics?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
I think that's amazing.
It's oversized. It's gonna be cool.
I think one version to pin on your wall and one to keep in the collection.
I don't know. No, I don't do that shit anymore. No. Yeah, I was gonna say, okay, Mr. Moneybags,
$8 worth of comics. But
the Wednesday Comics looks beautiful.
No, I'd pay $3.50 for some Image stuff and $3.90 for some. I just didn't like Thor enough to like be like, I'm gonna drop $4 on these Thor issues now. So I mean, it's a factor, but there's like independent titles I pay $3.99 for, but. Okay. I like them enough.
You would spend like $4 on I Kill Giants. You know.
Oh yeah, because it was totally worth it. I mean, I like Thor. I mean, there are superhero books I would pay $3.99 for because I like reading them enough. Mm-hmm. That you know, I love Justice Society. I would probably pay $3.99 to read Justice Society. Thor, I don't love enough to pay $3.99 for.
Is black and white or color a deal breaker as far as price for you? I mean, would you pay?
It doesn't really bother me.
I think it's more enjoyment level than it is
any of
those. Yeah, color, black and white, or page count may have a little bit to do with it. It's hard for me to justify $4 for a 22-page comic.
Yeah, page count fits into it. If it's like oversized, I can in my head be like, yeah, $3.99 is okay.
Yeah.
And it goes...
It's like Razzle. I'd spend $4 on Razzle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's
because it's an awesome.
It's because it's awesome, yeah.
Time travel, dimensional travel tale. It's weird.
Hell yeah!
It's weird. New issue comes out next week.
Does it really?
Yep, number 4.
See that's hard for me because my first experience with Razzle was buying that beautiful oversized collection of the first 3 issues.
Yep, that one right up there.
Nice. It's absolutely. It was.
Get ready to wait, then.
I know.
You're gonna start buying the single issues.
I'm like, do I want to get the single issues, knowing that there'll be a follow up? You know.
I bought both because it's worth it.
Yeah, the crazy thing though the funny thing with that though is it was only ever supposed to come out 4 times a year. Okay, and it came out 3 times in 1 year, which it's not great. But I remember between the first issue and the second issue when it took a couple months, people were like, oh, "It's already off its monthly schedule." And it's like it was never supposed to come out monthly. It's supposed to come out 4 times a year.
Monthly expectations.
Yeah, monthly expectations. I was like, no, it's supposed to come out 4 times a year. Granted, if you're aiming for 4 times a year and you only get 3 out, that is...
Oh.
It's not the greatest thing in the world.
But if it were baseball, kick-ass batting average.
75% is awesome. Yeah, you're going to the Hall of Fame with that.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Hell yeah. Speaking of something that's been on an odd schedule that we had a little news about, if you had been reading Billy Batson and Shazam... The Mike Kunkel?
I was.
He's still doing it.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's going to be 4, maybe 5 times a year. But that is now going to be a monthly book and about 9-ish issues a year are going to be done by Franco and Art Balthazar.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah. Cool. So the Tiny Titans guys are going to be...
They're expanding their empire.
Yes, they are.
Pretty soon your kids are only going to be reading Art Balthazar books.
Only.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and then he will like trick them into stealing money from you.
Subliminal
Shazam
messages
said
in the books.
To take money from Dad. Well,
Is that super sales?
That's the plan, is that they're going to use the secret code in the Billy Batson Shazam to...
because adults won't take the time to solve decode, but the code actually says... Take
$100 from your mom's billfold and mail it to
Shazam at Art Balthazar's address.
And congratulations to Art and Franco for their Eisner nomination for Best Children's Comic.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
So for Tiny Titans. So there's a little news from the Chicago peeps.
I think that's good luck from being on the show.
I believe so. It was. It was announced right after that. So, you, Mr. Bryant, you. I'm looking at you. You are a Eisner nominated comic book creator.
Yes.
That was exciting.
It was actually. This is a good transition because the year that I was nominated.
That's what I was working for.
Okay.
You see how that worked?
The year I was nominated for the Eisner, 2005 for best web comic was the year that your other guest across from me. Was nominated as the Russ Manning Best Newcomer Award.
Wait, so we have two Eisner-nominated creators at the table today?
Yes, and then the year after, right back at Steve, who was then nominated for the Russ Manning the next year.
Wow. That's
so you have
I'm feeling a little
I've never been nominated for anything.
No.
You have like three-time losers between us.
Well, I don't know about you.
Susan Lucci's.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but I knew when I saw the program when my book was spelled wrong that I knew I wasn't going to be the one.
Okay, so probably not a good chance.
It's not going to be wrong on the trophy, so yeah. That's wrong.
Well, Jim, but besides the fact that I know that Steve is a big fan of your work and you guys are friends, we are unfamiliar with your work. So what were you nominated for?
I was nominated for the Russ Manning, which was the most promising newcomer. And I don't know.
Tell them about the book.
Well,
wait a second. He was nominated. I think we deserve some applause for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. No, seriously.
But yeah, so that
Hillary just woke up.
Come on. What's going on? It's not false humility. He is. You know, this guy's a nice guy, but that's an achievement.
Okay. And
Sharks, the Sharks and the Jets. Sorry, we were talking about West Side Story.
Continue with your show.
Hillary's show's
coming out.
Wasn't me, man.
When does your podcast air, Hillary?
That's your podcast.
Nice. Put your pants on, that's please.
So, Mr. Heffron, continue. Sorry.
So, yeah, I was... It was for the book Territory 51, which was my first book.
Oh, yeah.
And, that came out, the first part of it came out in 2004, the second part in 2005, but loved doing it. After I did it, I was hooked. I had to keep cranking out some books, so I'm an indie publisher and proud of it, so.
Nice. And what are you working on these days?
I have a book that just was just solicited in the April previews called It Tolls for Thee, and kind of a medieval zombie little romp, I guess you could describe it, but you know, not I think as Territory 51, I kind of went in this sci-fi western direction. This is a little bit of a, you know, supernatural mixed with you know, Templar Knights and that kind of thing. So it's just a way of flexing some creative muscle, I guess. It was a lot of fun. So
zombie knights with swords.
Yes,
I'm there.
Well, it
sex it up a bit. Sex up, come on.
Okay. Mm. I think is one of those sort of tales where it's Well, do you guys want to take a look at some of the preview pages here?
This translates well on audio.
He's showing us. Oh my god. Oh my lord.
Oh, sure.
Now,
some high octane.
While these guys are getting set up, I'm going to jump in and pimp Jim a little bit. His company is called Law Dog Comics, LAWDOG Comics. So,
Law Dog.
Because he left that off. So.
Yeah. I'm doing it in kind of a widescreen format. Did you guys remember Rocketto?
Yes. Oh, I love Rocketto. Yeah. Frank Espinosa.
Yeah, so I'm trying to, you know, it's kind of playing with a little bit of a different format. I really like the, if you ever remember Oni Spaghetti Western too, they kind of did this sort of 6x9 in a widescreen. And I really, 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 you know, fell in love with doing sort of a widescreen book. And
what was the Mike Lark book, the Batman book that he did?
Nine Lives, was it?
Yeah, Batman Nine Lives.
Loved that, and I just really wanted to try something different kind of out of the box and working... you know, I'm trying to meld the various art parts with some interesting design and distressed pages, and kind of have this sort of the old fashioned kind of a look, like a.
This sounds challenging. That's good.
That's good, Tom.
That's good for me.
Now, are you self-publishing this?
Yeah, I. It's through my own imprint. Mm-hmm. I am doing a book. Kind of an ongoing project with Radical Comics. Are you guys familiar with?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I've heard the name.
What's the name of that book?
That book is called Feast of Fools, and
Feast of Fools. What a great name!
Thanks. It's about
that just jumps right out at you.
It does. It's about vampires taking over a prison, and it's sort of a work in progress. We'll see when that comes out.
Prison vampires, that zombie knights. It's
just whatever comes to mind has got to go onto a
hooker
page.
Hooker werewolves.
I'm going to draw that.
Shit.
I have to give you credit for that.
Hooker werewolves is a stupid idea,
hey,
Chris.
Well, you never make a comic book about here. That. You guys keep talking. That sounds great.
Hillary's on a beer run. God help us.
He's aggressive.
Hillary decides to leave when the word hooker comes up.
Yeah,
so.
He's like, oh,
he'll be back in 2025.
We're going on the street where the hookers are.
Hooker werewolf?
That reminds me.
Hirsute, no, I believe, would be the term for his
hooker. Very nice.
It's interesting because I haven't seen too many things since... Because I really enjoyed Riccato when it came out in that style, but I can't remember too many other things since then that have sort of gone with that same style.
The oblong, yeah.
The oblong.
When they say it's kind of a risky, especially from a retail standpoint.
Well, it's hard to shelf.
Yeah, and in fact, Diamond, they've been really really supportive. Initially, they were a little resistant to the idea for those reasons, and. When I sent them the project, they were like, "We're doing it," you know. So I felt confident.
Well, it's nice that you got the blessing of the distributor.
Yeah.
What a messed up world we live in.
Well, and I think too, in this
don't blow up a spot, dude.
Well, and I think too, you look at the current previews and just how much thinner it is, and it is becoming more of a challenge, I guess, for especially the indie guys like me who. I mean, I do it for the love of doing it, and you know, it's at generally a loss to me, but you know, I'm still going to do it. And that was the mentality going into the beginning. You know, you come up with an idea, you think, "Hey, this would make a great comic idea. Could I actually pull this off?" And you know, and I think it, especially in the last say 10 years, it just hasn't been an easy thing for anyone, even in comics, to you know make a living at it. So to try and break in with something in the indie world was definitely a risk, but I think, you know, Steve's in a category, and I'd say that, you know, I like to think that I am too, where, you know, now in this age, if you can do graphic design, if you can do the various pieces, you can make it happen. You don't have to necessarily say, you know, "Please, will you publish my book?" You can say, "You know what? I think if no one's interested, I'm going to do it myself and let it ride, see what happens." And,
sure.
You know, I think for Territory 51, I was at this crossroads where I was like, I'm in a window in my life. I'm either going to try this or regret it and wish the rest of my life I did try it. And, you know, I was thinking, do I want to buy a house or start up a publishing company? So, you know.
Well, houses aren't worth shit now.
And comics are a much less risky investment.
Yeah, exactly. You made the right choice, my friend.
Well, it's an upside-down world whenever publishing a comic is less risky than buying a house.
But the government won't give you a rebate on publishing comics.
No. We need to get some of this fucking stimulus money into the comic book industry. Let's get it. Oh, yeah. Come on.
I'm all for it.
Obama's a comics fan.
Yeah, as far as we know, he's a Marvel zombie. He doesn't even read anything.
No, he reads Conan.
There's probably only the Marvel
Conan.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look past the first half of previews.
can you imagine Obama going into his comic shop every Wednesday and say, "Is previews out?"
There's an Obama variant cover for It Tolls for Thee, I should mention.
Of course there is. Of course.
Zombie Medieval Knight Obama.
Actually, you can thank Sal for his Obama-related thing that bumped my ad to the left-hand page when I really wanted the right in previews, but, you know, that's for a different time.
Who did?
Isn't Sal...
Abernathy?
Yeah.
Oh.
The Obama thing on the right bumped me, but anyway. I really wanted the right-hand page. But,
damn it.
Why did you want the right-hand page?
Well, flip factor.
Yeah.
When you're flipping through... Going from the back, the right-hand page is always the... Are you going to back us up?
In the front half of the book, you want the left-hand page. In the back half of the book, you want the... No, see? In the front half of the book, you want the right-hand page. In the back half of the book, you want the left-hand
page.
So
then tell us...
Because people flip from back to front if it's in the back of the book, you see the left-hand page.
So how do you go if you're game planning to be on one half of the book? How does that work?
You send him a box of chocolates,
and you say, "Please put me on this side." So you just ask to be put on a. How does it work?
You just ask, and if they can accommodate. I think it depends on who has how many ad pages and how many spreads, and you know what's going to get bumped where.
You know, in the current state of comics and dealing with Diamond, is it easier for you to sell your books at conventions or out of the back of a truck or what's
it? It's a little of both. I think for me initially out of the gates, I felt like there were certain things I had to do, like do a full page color ad and previews, do some things that you kind of go, oh man, I don't know if I can afford that. I really was just sort of planning for, you know, this part of it and this part of it. And I think, you know, if you want to be taken seriously, there's a sort of a minimum requirement of what you have to bring to the table for someone to even give you a chance.
There's a threshold to being taken.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, I think of comic fans as the type of fan that I am, and you know, if there's going to be something that's going to be, and retailers too, I think so many of them were burned with some stuff, especially in the 90s, that was just, you know, you're going, I have to try and get them to want to buy this too, and so I feel like there's that. The shows are important, but the whole thing, you know, making good on anybody that write, you know, every last email, any question, everything, just, you know, embrace everybody that would take a chance on the book, you know, and even for the, you know, I think we have some times when we were in San Diego, you know, you're going around to the various retailers, and I think one specifically took the book and threw it on the floor in his booth area, and you're thinking, you know, am I going to try and do that again?
Can I get that copy back?
Right, I guess maybe sell that to somebody. Or
yeah, you've got to keep doing that, though, because I know nobody likes the idea that you have to pre-order stuff sight unseen 3 months before it comes out. But, you know, that's all we can do at this point. It would be great to be able to change the system, but you can't. So you've got to court the retailers. You've got to court readers. You've got to, you know, remind them that pre-ordering is the lifeblood of, you know, independent comics. Because if orders don't come through, sometimes these books just won't happen.
Yeah, they just
I sound like
ordered.
The PBS pledge drive.
Mm-hmm.
Please, if you pre-order this book, you will get a tote bag.
Actually, Jim will come to your house and clean your windows.
Yeah, you know, I am a terrible human being. I have never pre-ordered a book.
Really?
Ever. Never
but
once.
You have a kick-ass store, so that's a different story.
Well, I have a pull list, and Mark is...
Pull list is pre-ordering.
Well, okay. Then I pre-order, because I have a pull list. But I've never, like, gone through previews and said,
shameful ass. You know, you say you like comics.
Yeah.
You piece of garbage.
But, you know, I have a great shop owner that, I mean, he knows that whenever the Athena of Altair Black Coat one-shot comes out, he knows that there are going to be people in the store that are going to buy that. And so I didn't have to worry about pre-ordering it because I knew it was going to be here.
Right.
And, you know, it just seems like so much of the onus has been put on the actual comic book consumer to drive not consumer sales, but like pre-consumer sales, which is crazy. It's insanity.
It's completely stupid, but that's unfortunately the machine that we have to work with. You know, because there are so many stores where when I was trying to pitch a book, you know, people couldn't get it through their store because the guy
didn't pre-order. Yeah, he didn't.
Wouldn't pre-order it.
Yeah, didn't.
Didn't
order it.
Yeah, you could even bring in the number, the page from previews, the order number, all of that stuff, and the book still wouldn't make it. So it's an uphill battle, and I know it feels really awkward to ask people to pre-order this book.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You make previews available online and stuff like that. But
it'll be good.
I mean,
it'll
be good.
It's
hard for the consumer to make a you know, an educated decision by not having a.
There's not too many things where you are asked to like decide before you've seen something,
right?
Like whether it's worth.
Yeah,
spending.
Like, I heard this band was really good. Pre-order their CD.
You know, I mean, there's not too many avenues in which that happens, but
I think as a creator and an indie publisher too, you have to provide, you know, that person with enough information up front, whether it be preview pages or something where they can get a good look at, good look at what, and say, hey, this looks like anything that Dark Horse Image, whoever does, I'm in.
Do you have a preview?
I do, actually. It's at www.lawdogcomics.net, and I have a 12-page preview of this book.
Nice.
But I think, you know, you have to give them enough too where they're going to say, hey, you know, I look at these guys, I look at what they've done. They've done mainstream stuff. I think for our book, It Tolls for Thee, I mean, Jason Mullay's colored Fear Agent. He's done Teen Titans. He's done.
Oh, you got that hack working on it?
He is a hack, too.
No, we love Jason. Jason's great.
But yeah, I think you have, you know, you got to bring the talent to the book. I mean, I think you think of some bad indies in the past, and it had a, you know, Adam Hughes cover, and then you looked inside, it was like, gee, what? You know, I can't believe I bought this based on. And I mean, you got to carry it through. It's got to be a quality product, you know, start to finish. But even when we were talking about price before, and I think, you know, Steve and I have talked endlessly about what's the price point you can shoot for an indie versus, say, a mainstream. What prices you out of someone giving you a chance, you know? And I think, you know, for territory, for this, for anything I'm going to do, I can't look at it as bottom line dollars of what this is going to create. I have to look at it as every time I do a book, I'm going to try and invite in a new reader. Will they take a chance on me? And price it according to that.
Hey there, folks. I wanted to make sure that if you're going to be in the Chicago or Chicagoland area this Saturday, May 2nd for Free Comic Book Day, that you add Challengers Comics in Conversation and Dark Tower Comics onto your list of shops to visit. Great reason to do so, because at Challengers Comics from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock, Image founder Eric Larson will be signing. You can find Challengers Comics in Conversation at 1845 Northwestern Avenue. And then at Dark Tower Comics, they're going to have a host of some of our favorite creators, including Mike Norton, Tim Seeley, Sal Abinati, Chris Burnham, Tony Akins, and Jeffrey Brown. And Dark Tower, of course, is located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue. So if you're going to be in Chicago, drop on by either, or even better, both of our favorite stores in Chicago. Hopefully, we'll see you there.
Back through the mess with a greased up machete. From the axles of a boxcar, follow the dotted line.
I have to say, talked about Athena Volterra, Black Coat. I did enjoy that one shot.
Yes, I did.
Quite a bit.
As well.
Thank you. Some copies have been misplaced at a diamond warehouse.
What?
So we're still waiting. So if your store has told you it's been canceled, we're trying to get that resolved.
Which, speaking of price points, too,
$2.
That's a great way if you're going to take a chance on something new. That's it.
And it's cool because I really like Black Coat a lot, and I like Athena Voltaire, and it is a nice story to introduce both characters, and it ties in together. It's just very well done story.
Your kickback will be paid out after the show.
Thank
you.
I want to talk a little bit about your guys' influences. You know, we've had Steve on before, and you're extremely influenced by pulp and pulp comics, and, you know, The Shadow and Green Hornet. And I know that you're loving The Green Hornet right now.
I'd kill to do that book.
Yeah. Oh, I know you have killed to do that book. They just haven't found the bodies yet.
What book do you refer to?
Jim has a Green Hornet shirt on.
Dynamite, we need Steve Bryant on the Green Hornet.
Let Steve Bryant draw Green Hornet.
But Jim, what are some of your comic book influences?
I would say Neil Adams is really my comic god of gods.
He's your guy.
Yeah. And, you know... Jim Nelson, who's over to the right, and Steve and I and our sort of core group of buddies all sort of geek out for the same guys.
It's Stevens.
It's Garcia Lopez. It's
Jim will go. I'm going to start this story because this is the funniest story. He'll go to lengths. He'll actually travel the earth in search of obscure guys that may have done one or two pages for Continuity Studios. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Very true. Maybe a month back, I got a call from him, and we're in the middle of our conversation, and he starts a sentence with the phrase, "I was on Filipino eBay the other day."
Oh, no.
And I'll let him fill you in on this.
I didn't realize there was a specific Filipino
eBay. I know. That was my first thought. And how the fuck did he find it?
Continuity Studios.
If it's somebody you like, and you know, you go to the ends of the earth to try and track down their stuff, I guess. But Nestor Infante, Where's your hold on to your pages.
If you're listening, please send me info. I need to get hold
send
of your
me
stuff.
A link.
I need to get all their stuff. I almost picked up the Neil Adams Illustrates the DC Universe book, except I picked the Walt Simonson Thor one instead. Mm-hmm. I was going to get both.
It's like Sophie's Choice.
It was tough. I cried. I held both in my hands, and I stood in the shop for like an hour, just like,
oh, Neil Adams, if it wasn't for your faux science.
And the owner, if it wasn't for your Hollow Earth theory. And the shop owner looked at me and was like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I don't know which one to go with.
Help me
decide.
You know, Andy Parks has a great blog. And you go there, and he has great inking tips and talks about, you know, different artists and does a really nice job of explaining and deconstructing some of the classic artists. And he had before and after pages from some of Neil Adams' Batman stuff from the original release, and then the stuff that he has gone back and touched up and kind of reworked for the reprints. And I'm really on the fence about this, and I know that some people just lose their minds over the new coloring on them.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works for me, sometimes it doesn't. I actually kind of, this is heresy to a lot of Neil Adams fans, but I kind of like some of the new coloring. Not all of it, but I like some of it. But he has redrawn panels and faces. And how do you feel about reworking classic stuff for reprints?
I've had this same argument with people about like essentials or like showcases about whether stuff should be in black and white. I often hear people say the thing like, oh, that's not how it was originally intended. And I'm like, when does anything ever come out as original? Like, what's your criteria for originally intended by whom?
Yeah.
Because... Yeah. Anytime someone touches it, it's going to change from whoever had it previously's intention to it. So you can say a black and white comic was that, you know, if I read Howard the Duck in black and white, I think that's a hell of a lot closer to how Gene Colan wanted it to look than I would say that the original colored comics were.
Sure.
You know, judging it by intention, like the purist view, I think sometimes is a little misguided. Now, if you're going to judge it based solely on quality, like, does it look better? Does it, you know, is it... I think that's a far better test of whether this stuff, you know, is worth retouching, because you will see people say, like, oh, I can't read the Jonah Hex showcase because it's black and white.
Oh,
and
I
like,
love it, the looks, Jonah
I'm
Hex
sorry,
showcase.
It looks better than the bad coloring... Not, I shouldn't say bad, because it's limited to what they could do at the time.
Of the era. Yeah.
Limited to what they could do at the time. That it looks, that is what the guy who drew it probably wanted it to look like,
right,
you know, at the time.
When you were talking about Neil Adams, I think if you're the purist that has to have, you know, your Adams as it was. I mean, I have a collection of black and white versions that were done in England, which are all in black and white, so you could see all his cool Zip-a-tone and all the effect stuff. And, you know, that's great for your art guy. For, you know, someone that maybe doesn't know who Neil Adams, this essential stuff that's recolored, you think that's probably a good way to bring them up, you know, and say, you got to check out, you know, one of the greats. And
in what volumes were they retouching?
Go to Andy's blog. Google Andy Parks. And it was...
Was it like a Neil Adams Batman?
Yeah. Well, there was the three volumes that he had, the Denny O'Neill Neil Adams Batman.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember it was the stories for, do you guys remember the Power Records that the
I love the Power Records. Records. Yeah.
It's those stories. It was the, I know. I'm getting the look, as I'll go into all the specific panels if you want. No.
Stop. Steve's like, stop. Just don't go any further.
But this amuses me.
But, so they've touched up like the inking and the coloring.
No, I mean there are panels that are basically redrawn.
Interesting.
There was one in particular of Superman where it's his he's looking in a completely different direction, and his head had been completely redrawn.
I think there's also an element to it that you can't undo what's been done. Like, you can go back and redo something, but it exists.
And I mean, I think Andy made a nice point on his blog that I kind of agree with. I would, rather than seeing Neil Adams spend time going back and
turning Superman's redrawing head.
And embellishing or redoing stuff that's 20 or 30 years old, you know, it's like, God damn it, Neil, draw a new Batman story.
Right.
You know?
Because I always think of those pages he has at the shows in New York and San Diego. It's this Batman, right? The Batman Odyssey. Is that the book? And I'm thinking
the one he's been talking about for years.
Yeah, yeah. It's just love to see it though.
That's,
yeah.
What do you think of like reprint volumes, like black and white from originals, or just like any of the repackaged stuff?
I love the black and white from originals. Yeah. Like Jim was saying, the being able to see the art geek in me just looks at it, and I can stare at the craft involved in the line art. But
when we talked to John Byrne a couple of years ago, he loved the X-Men Essentials, right? Yeah, Marvel's the Essentials. He said it was truer to what he and Terry Austin, truer to the art that they had done than what was originally printed. Yeah. Now, to Marvel's credit, the Omnibus and the Masterworks and all that kind of stuff has been recolored from scratch, and so there was a lot of really muddy, limited of the time color that really was not very nice. Well, and they've gone back and they've kept with the very limited color palette, but they just clean stuff up. Actually, Wesley Wong, who is a Chicagoan, does a lot of recoloring for the Omnibus and the Masterworks stuff.
I think what you said was really interesting, because I'm a huge Flash fan, and I have a lot of Silver Age issues, and I've bought the showcases. And the difference between looking at the Infantino like art without the coloring over the top of it compared to the coloring, obviously there's going to be qualities lost to certain things, because when you deal with superheroes, obviously big bright colors are extremely important to what draws people to it.
It's hard to read a Green Lantern showcase. And
they
and
always say what's yellow, though.
Okay.
They say it out loud like 20 times. But
that bus is yellow.
But it's really interesting, because when you look at it separated from color, there's sometimes you get these really weird panels where you're like, wow, that doesn't look like a superhero panel. It looks like it's like this really moody, like weird panel that's separate from like a yellow background with red coloring. It looks really, and it's interesting, because when I was a kid, I was never big into art until I've gotten older and have like started becoming more interested in like looking at the art. And I've really enjoyed the black and white books, even though they're not perfect pencil reproductions, having it separated from that color. I'm like, whoa, sometimes you see things that you wouldn't have picked out previously from it.
It's so funny, because I think about the comics that I read as a kid, and I think of them as being so colorful and so bright. Is so so Bryant. Yeah, there's
so Steve Bryant.
So they're so Steve Bryant. So thank colorful you. And so vibrant. And then I go back and I look at go dig through long boxes and I pull them out, and it's like, the coloring on this is terrible. This looks like shit. And it's nowhere near what I remember them being like as a kid, and remember enjoying them so much. So I think definitely our taste in comics coloring has changed over the years. And I look at like old X-Men, the old Byrne, Claremont, Terry Austin stuff, and I would rather read those in black and white than the color that was available at the time.
Not just the color, but I mean, that was the real newsprint, where you'd have like chunks of wood in there.
Yeah.
And I mean, the stuff that the showcase and the essentials are on isn't actual newsprint, right?
It's better.
Yeah.
It's better than
what you're holding a lot more of a line to it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd rather look at that than a glob of ink and go, oh, I think that was Iris West.
Oh, Colin's stuff in the Howard the Duck Essentials is breathtaking.
The stuff in the showcase, the paper in that's really nice white, bright paper. And some like I was reading the Challengers of the Unknown one.
That's a good showcase.
I'm like, this is a pretty nice paper and nice black and white. It looks good on it. I'm always, when I'm like telling people, oh, if you want to read old comics, the essentials and showcases are a good way to go, oh, I can't read something in black and white. Well, it's like, yes, you can separate yourself. So you can separate yourself a little bit from your No, oh, look at Hillary, like, shaking his head at me.
You can't read something in black and white? What does that mean?
Yeah, I know, it's like, Hillary's gonna get angry. It means I refuse to read something in black and white.
A son of a friend of mine once said they couldn't watch, or they didn't want to watch, movies in black and white because they move too slow. As if there was something
about slower, color. Yeah.
Yeah, the color speeds things up. Well, like the House of Mysteries, I at this point, I can't imagine those not being in black and white because that's the only way that I've read them. And you want to talk about some great Filipino artists? Good Lord!
Yeah, I was gonna say for your point before about like the Byrne Austin stuff. I think when you're talking about repackaging some of that stuff, you know, with the modern coloring that we have in comics now, I think there's an area too where you can't go on some of those things because when they were doing it, the end game was what they knew was going to be printed. And sure. I think of the Austin stuff, especially it's sold lush that you color it how they color books today. And it's going to look so impossibly over rendered. You're going to like, I can't even look at this.
It's going to look like a Finch page with like 1,000. You know, it's going to be over the top.
Well, yeah. And you think of all the stuff on the racks now where the coloring is really, really sophisticated. Now try and picture that stuff in the black and whites you're talking about. You can't because there's not enough of the line.
It would never in a thousand years work on a flash book from 1962 just because it was never designed. It's not designed to be like that. You know, it's not, things aren't laid out to have that sort of level of like coloring.
Yeah, I think I think that's why you look at the old school illustrators, and that's why there's just so much to learn from there by anyone that wants to do comics now, because those guys were amazing. They could draw, and you were saying Ross Andrew, but could draw everything. He could draw every last little, you know.
Yeah, well, it's crazy to, you know, when I was talking about people bitching about Ross Andrew drawing the Flash instead of Infantino on those issues, and it's really funny because you see, you know, the difference. And it's obviously it played up in a certain way to kids at the time, but when you look at it like from a more adult point of view, you see Infantino draws like future stuff awesome. Everything is sleek, and he draws things, they look fast and thin and fast. And you see Andrew's stuff is a bit more bulky, but he's busting like the panel borders. There's like people's feet sticking into the next one, like something you would never see Infantino would not have drawn.
He wasn't going to do that.
He was going to draw things a certain way. And, you know, obviously when you're a kid, you probably have some sort of subconscious guttural reaction to how you anticipate something looks, because you think this looks like this. And then your reaction to that is like, oh, you know, it's bad. Someone's challenged, you know. And
this is not what it's supposed to look like.
If you're not able to articulate what it is about something that is different to you, it can come out as like, oh, he's a bad artist on it. But yeah, I mean, some of those black and white books, like the House of Mystery stuff and Howard the Duck, like what? Reading that stuff in black and white, I was just like, that, wow. You know, I'm like, whoa, that is, you know, when they came out with the omnibus, I was like, yeah, I don't even really need to buy it. Like,
but the omnibus.
I'm like,
but the omnibus is awesome. Really nice. It's,
oh, of course you have it.
Of course I do.
You know, you're talking about the Challengers showcase. And I mean, that's Wally Wood inking Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
Which is like
an art book.
Yes. Yeah. It's an art book. And my favorite Kirby is actually the Sky Masters of the Space Force newspaper strip that, I can't remember, Greg Theakston's publishing company collected all that, and it's Kirby inked by Wood. Just wow. It's right around the same period as the Challenger stuff.
That stuff's awesome.
It's out of print now, but it's just beautiful, and you know it should be in black and white. So
to look at it, yeah, I think it's just, I think it's really interesting how fans put, not necessarily in a bad way, put their own like sort of value judgment on what is like the minimum threshold for like. It needs to be in color. It needs to be this way and that way. Or like, you know, you can separate yourself a little bit from that thing sometimes and be like, I realize that the Flash was printed in color. You know, like, I'm not, it doesn't negate the fact that it did, but here's another way of looking at this book, if you're interested in looking at the art, is, like, separate it from that color and just look at, you know, how it was drawn.
Well, I think a good example of maybe that now is this new, we were geeking out over this Darwin Parker thing.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of just the one, you know, gunmetal greenish tone through it, and you're just, it's unbelievable.
There's been a couple books that have been...
If you don't buy Darwin Cook's Parker, you don't like comics.
What was the other thing I read lately that had that
same... It's going to be so awesome.
There was something else I read that had that same, not Casanova, that had that same very, like, same color. There was another image book, I want to say, that I read that had, like, an extreme... Oh, it was The Great Unknown by Duncan Rouleau. Had, like, a blue... It was only blues and, like, blacks, and it was, like, a very limited... If you separated yourself from looking at the story and just looked at what the actual colors were on the page, it was not a wide, like a wide palette. Thank you, Hillary.
But you're still going to have people who are going to check out and just not see, you know, a whole Skittles bag of colors, and they're going to bitch about it. You know, it's the kind of thing where, you know, you see on a forum where people are saying, what's more important to you, the writing or the art? And I think for most of them, the most important thing is if it's in color, if it's shiny, they'll buy it.
Yeah.
But if it's, you know, Greg Rucka, say, writing a black and white book like Queen and Country, they won't buy it.
You know what drove me insane? I was reading someplace where someone was complaining about John Romita Jr.'s art and was like, it didn't look like how a person looks. And I was like, I don't read... It kind of twisted my head around because I was thinking about, like, if you're reading a comic, to me, like, I never read comics because I wanted to read stories where people looked exactly like how people looked. Like, to me, that wasn't the end point of what I was doing, was like...
I've never seen a person with a black outline around him except for Chris.
You know? Well, because Chris is—he's got issues.
Well,
he looks like a John Romita Jr. drawing.
I do.
Tons of lines. His knees and elbows are not well defined.
But he's got that kind of—he's got that.
Sal's not here, so somebody's
got a rip on you.
Somebody's got a rip on me. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, guys. I would love to go on and on about this, but we have a few other things we want to talk about. I think that you might have some interesting insight into. We got an interesting voicemail this week, and if you would like to leave us a voicemail, you certainly can do so by calling 1-888-997-5903. And take a listen.
So did you guys hear about this 100th year one kerfuffle there last week?
We did.
How it's like we started
shot up to number one in graphic novels and Amazon and number 10 in regular books. And then there was a picture of Chavez giving Obama a copy of 100th Year One. And anyway, you can check it all out on
the
Publishers Weekly blog or redroom.com, which was kind of weird and cool. And also, if Green Lantern fans are known as Green Fanterns, what should Flash fans be known as? I propose Flashers. Thank you. Good show, Dr.
Intelligent men of good taste.
To be known as Caters.
Caters.
So there you go. Thank you. Thank you for leaving us voicemail.
What do I think of the Huntress thing?
Well, just to set this up for folks, that kind of out of the blue, the Huntress trade paperback shot up the Amazon sales rankings.
Why do we care?
It was the number one selling graphic novel, and it was like the number 10 book overall. Okay. Or something like that.
Oh, so you're saying it was a cheap ploy, like that hackneyed piece of shit, Cowboys and Aliens. Gotcha. Well,
yes and no. First of all, I liked Huntress Year One. I thought it was a good story.
I didn't read it. I was just taking a cheap shot at Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to lump them together because I really did like Huntress Year One. I thought it was a good origin story. Blah blah blah. What the deal was apparently, and this is unconfirmed. This is what I was able to find online, is that the writer Ivory Madison who wrote Huntress Year One, bought a bunch of copies from Amazon, like a bunch of copies, to send out to reviewers like us. We actually received an email from redroom.com, which is handling her marketing, and or I guess her, I don't know the whole story, but redroom.com contacted us and a lot of other bloggers and podcasts and said, hey, this is a good book, let us know if you want a review copy, we'll send you one. What they had done, they had bought, I guess, all of their review copies at Amazon at once. In one day.
Yeah, well, or
and it shot it up.
Smart, I guess. Yeah, I mean, yeah. See, that's I just don't understand why we care. Why yeah. does any? Why did the blogosphere suddenly care?
It sounded like a pretty good business decision. We're going to buy a bunch of books from a retailer to send people to review.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not getting your comp copies, or if you can get a comparable price through Amazon instead of buying direct, you know. Yeah. Through your publisher with comp copies. Why not? That's smart.
It's people maybe in theory saw it higher on the sales charts and said, hey, what's this Huntress Year One?
You know, I
want to clarify. I did not read Huntress. I just wanted to take a cheap shot at Cowboys.
I think it's just
it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a good book.
It's all part of the fucking comic fandom's obsession with minutiae and caring about why is this number one? It's number one because they bought a bunch. What world do we live in where everyone's sweating the obvious?
Well, if
of course they bought a bunch to give to people. Yeah, that's what happens.
If you bought a bunch of books, if you bought 5 books to give out as gifts to close personal friends,
is this like a Madoff thing? It's like those weren't actually my assets.
$50 billion.
You start talking about real world stuff, I'm lost.
It's just books. It's somebody bought a bunch of books from Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you happen to have 100 close personal friends you wanted to send books out to, it would count just as much, right?
We have gifts.
What's the background on this author? Is she a best-selling novelist?
I don't know. I think this was.
She's written some novels. I think she is a novelist.
Maybe it helps with the next.
I just thought it was really funny.
I thought it was a smart marketing business.
It was funny reading people coming up with these conspiracy theories, and I kept reading conspiracy theories. And I was like, it's not a conspiracy theory. That's how you market your fucking book.
It's not a goddamn conspiracy. So all I'll say is that if you are a Batman fan, if you are a fan of the Huntress character, and you read this blog blow up and that turned you off. If it turned you off to the book, don't let it turn. Go check it out. Read it. I enjoyed it.
There's 10,000 people talking about comic books, and there's 4 things to talk about. So you have to. It's either what just came out, what's coming out, what's late. There's 4 things to talk about, so everyone picks on one thing and then discusses it to fucking death. If she bought a bunch of copies of Huntress, it was some sort of fraud.
Here today, gone today.
Yeah, a week from now, no one will care.
Hey, man, you guys know it more than anyone. I mean, you have to carry a lot of water to get your book out there, and if they had the ability to buy a bunch of books from a discount retailer like Amazon and use them to market and promote the, good on them. That's
well, yeah, I agree.
I think you too. You look at, I'm going to refer to indie stuff, but one of the things I, when I first did the first issue, I realized after the fact that, that issue was good for maybe the month it was out and maybe 2, and then that was it. There was no way it was going to be inventoried at a place like Diamond or anybody else, any of the other distributors. And you're going, if I could go back in time, I would have just did that as a graphic novel with a barcode, and it could stay on a bookcase. And you're thinking, I don't think I'd make that, I wouldn't make that mistake again for me. I would only, going forward, I'm only going to do the OGNs. I think, for Steve and, things like Athena, that's best served in a floppy and an OGN, but your publisher can do it.
Right. But no, you're totally right. And what she's doing is she's just trying to keep the life of it out there, because if she buys 100 copies, yeah, it's a twofold mechanism, because one, she's trying to bring up the sales numbers, the which is reasonable. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. completely reasonable. But secondly, she's putting it in the hands of 100 reviewers. And 100 reviewers...
It was
reviewers,
more like 1,000.
Okay, 1,000. Even better. Because, you know, you're going to have, what, 5% of them maybe end up reviewing it? So that's 50
reviews.
We're
now talking about this book for...
Yeah.
Like 10 minutes.
More power to her.
I'm going to go back to print again, and, yeah. and she'll get royalties on each printing of it, and that's a good way to keep it burning.
And who knows, if she bought it through her own Amazon portal on her site, she's going to get a kickback for selling it to herself.
Nice work.
So, hey,
contact her.
I'm going to rip her off. I think it's brilliant.
Oh, that is great.
Nice. Well, there you go. Thank you for that voicemail. Spurred some nice discussions. So send in those voicemails and emails. You can email the show at info@aroundcomics.com. We do have some emails, but I think I'm going to push those to next week. So
we're always pushing.
But keep emailing.
I'm sure we'll get some stuff. Angry email from someone yes. who only
well
likes
no we
books
we have
some
we
color, got, we and got, I offended them by saying that they were foolish.
I might have offended them too. I'll read it.
We have a guy. We have a guy from Sweden that emailed us, so we're gonna get to that one next week.
And
so
speak English. Tom will read it in a Swedish accent like the Swedish chef on the Muppets.
Alright, so before we wrap up here, Mr. Bryant, where can people find out more of your work on the internets?
It is at atomictiki.blogspot.com.
All right. Ooh, once again,
follow me on Twitter at Atomic Tiki.
There you go. Yes, Twitter. Nice. Mr. Heffron?
www.lawdogcomics.net.
All right.
And on the summer convention circuit.
Oh yeah, we're Siamese twins on the summer convention circuit.
So you're sharing a table at Windy City.
Sure. That sounds great. And we'll be in M14 and 15 at San Diego Comic-Con, along with Jim Nelson, artist of Magic the Gathering and World of Warcraft.
Awesome. All right. Which, yes, we will talk about Windy City Comic-Con with you, Mr. Heffron. You have good work.
Oh, excellent.
Which, speaking of, September 19th, Center on Halstead. Get your details at www.windycitycomiccon.com. Pre-register. Get your tickets. Only $10.
Yep. Get tickets now.
80 creators. 20 exhibitors.
And me.
And Tom. Oh, naked in pancake batter.
I'll just be standing around sort of surly. I'll probably offend you if you come up to that. I'll probably, you know, be curt with you as I was in the past.
All right.
Kurt Busick or Kurt Swan?
I will.
Kurt Swan.
I'll let people know.
I'm mortalizing you.
Keep dropping by aroundcomics.com. We've got some changes coming to the website that you're going to want to go there and visit. We've got some very cool stuff that Sal is working on.
Is pornography involved now?
Perhaps. It's very flexible.
There goes Steve with the bell.
Tom versus the Flash, 3 times a week.
Yep.
You can listen to more of me, a little bit drunker and a little bit angrier on 11 o'clock comics every Friday.
Jesus Christ, this is full of plugs.
With David Price, Vince B., and Wood. I think that iTunes music reviews. Give us some.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Mr. Bryant.
Thank you.
Reverend.
I'd
thank Mr. Mark Beatty for hosting this here at wonderful Dark Tower Comics.
Hillary Barta. He's been playing with this butterfly knife for like...
I know. He's just like, I'm going to cut you.
Are you still online?
Yes.
We're recording.
That's good.
You want to talk?
Are you done bullshitting and you want to talk now?
Oh, well, Jesus.
Yeah, let's talk.
No, because it's like Tom was like skirting around the whole issue of, you know, of these.
I'm trying not to
offend
people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Try not to incite anger.
Well, you know what? That's dull, Tom. Let's start offending people.
Have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime,
in between time.
Thank you. We'll be everywhere
and around comics.
Hillary's going to go after Protestants next week.
According to Tom.
Yeah.
Well, no, if you want to kiss their ass, you might as well French it, Tom. Jesus Christ.
It's the only way I know how to operate. It's the only way I know. I work in the business world. That's how things work.
views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been Around Comics Production, copyright 2009.
What Brown can do-do for you.